Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! For a summer preview edition of our little first segment here is Associate Editor Gia Manry. Hey, Gia.
Hey, what's up?
Not a lot. And our latest addition to our pantheon of critics, brand new edition, Rebecca Silverman. Hey, Rebecca.
Hello.
How are you liking the preview guide so far?
It's been a very interesting experience.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It is.
But it's certainly worth it for the site. But yeah, so it's been fun, especially for Gia and I, because I came back from AX Monday morning on the 4th of July at like 10 a.m., took a nap for like 2 hours, woke up and started the preview guide, and then basically didn't stop until like Sunday evening when it finally started slowing down a little bit. But my God. It has been a very long month so far, and we're only halfway through it. Only a couple of days till Comic-Con.
Hey, well, just wait till I'm doing finals and trying to get your reviews.
Yeah, there you go. It'll be a lot of fun. So, I have to admit, like, this season has most of the time, I try to stick to, like, okay, what were the highlights? What were the good points? You know, were the highs higher than the lowest lows? This season's got some low lows.
Yes.
That is putting it mildly.
Yeah, the tremendously bad stuff is worse than however decent the okay decent stuff is. And there isn't nothing really kind of blew me away. I have not watched Mawaru Penguin Drum yet, and everybody keeps telling me, watch it. I know I need to. But I guess, Gia, starting with you, let's start with the best stuff. What really stuck out for you?
The two shows I'm the most excited about so far are Mawaru Penguin Drum, of course. And I never even saw – I've only seen the Utena movie. I haven't even seen the TV series yet. Mm. We picked up the first chunk of it. I just haven't gotten to it yet. But that looks like it's going to be sort of – I mean, the most creative thing I've seen in a while. And I'm really into number 6. And now that's a Noitamina show, I think. So I'm hoping Funimation will simulcast it so I can watch all the rest of it. But it looks like it's setting up to be pretty interesting.
Okay, I have a feeling like we're all pretty much going to say the same things, but Rebecca, what stuck out for you in terms of, like, this is good?
Well, again, the Mawaru Penguin Drum was definitely a favorite. It was nice to look at. It was sort of fascinating and gave me nice Utena flashbacks from when I was in college, so that was good. I also really liked Usagi Drop. I'm a little sick of schoolgirls, and this was a nice change.
Yeah, I got specific requests for us to not really talk that much about Usagi Drop. Not that I'm going to follow that. I'll talk about whatever I damn well please on my own show. But the controversy around that show is ridiculous. It's a little nuts.
Yeah, I mean, and I was kind of trying to decide how to handle that in my review, and I just tried to set it all aside and just focus on the one episode, but...
Yeah, you both did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that can really kill a show for some people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you both did that. You both just focused on the one episode, and that's why we have 7 people writing reviews, so we get a whole bunch of different takes on it. But I obviously just drove the car into the ditch and hit the gas on the whole ending thing, because that makes or breaks that entire premise for me.
Yeah, that's understandable.
You know, and obviously we won't spoil it here, even though it's been spoiled a billion times everywhere else. But that's the kind of thing, you know, in terms of, like, that spoiler, that's the kind of thing I want to know before I start reading or start watching. Because obviously that show is more about the journey than it is about any kind of plot twists. It's more about watching these characters interact than it is about, you know, how the plot goes exactly. So, you know, knowing how it ends doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily going to spoil the experience for you unless it ends in a particular way. So, yeah, Usagi Drop. Really well made, though. Really nice episode. I mean, the animation was great, and the, although the character designs are simplistic almost to a fault. Just the art style.
Yeah, and that's pretty identical to the manga, too. So if you'd read it, you did know what you were getting into, but otherwise it's kind of a rude shock.
There was a little bit of a controversy because we basically printed a bunch of pans of the Idolmaster, and I have to admit, like, I wasn't even going to watch it because I looked at the premise and said, "Yep, not for me." But eventually, then a bunch of people started, you know, complaining, like, "Hey, you guys aren't giving the show its due," and no one talked about the animation, which everyone said was supposed to be really great. And apparently, you know, the show is made by a bunch of fan favorite animators from like Gurren Lagann, like Gainax dudes. So that's kind of why people were excited about it. And eventually I finally watched it, and I thought it was kind of cute. I mean, it's not great. I'm not going to watch more of it, but I kind of liked it for what it was. Like, I thought it succeeded at, for being as sort of disgustingly corporate, you know, that is a product through and through. It's not art. It's a product. But it's particularly well-made product.
That was sort of my take on it, that, you know, I mean, This isn't, I mean, I think you said it this way in the forums, it's not for me, this is not, I am not that target, I'm not especially into this kind of story, but I could tell that they were really putting a lot of effort into the visuals and into the way that they set up the story and whatnot. I mean, it's very well done. If that's the kind of thing you're into, you're really going to like this.
My major problem with this was just boring.
It kept nodding off. Yeah. It is pretty dull. It's literally just, look at all these cute girls, and oh, aren't they cute? And that's it.
Hamster.
Yeah, right. But it's really well made. Look at these cute girls. So I give it a pass. So one show, like, increasingly thinking about it, that I thought was really just, why does this exist? Is Blood Sea. Like,
I kind of liked that one.
You gave it a 5 for some reason. I don't know why you gave it a 5.
I think I liked the way the whole package came together. I really appreciated the sound design. I thought it was nicely animated. And maybe because I just didn't know the franchise. I haven't seen how good it could be.
Yeah,
I have absorbed every piece of Blood, the Last Vampire-related stuff. I mean, the original movie, the terrible live-action movie. I actually liked Blood Plus, which is a very sort of shoujo-y take already. Blood Sea, I mean, it's very pretty. I won't deny it has some potential, but, I mean, the characters become such archetypes, and you don't get a sense that that's a front or anything. I mean, those annoying twin characters, I mean, those have been in 8,000 anime over the years. I have no interest in them. So, I mean, I'm a fan of the franchise, so I'm definitely going to watch more of it to see how if it develops into something better. But based on that first episode, I don't think I could recommend it to anybody except for people who just really like Clamp's style.
My issue with it was in the construction. The first half of the episode is a generic Clamp school heroine thing that, with a particularly obnoxious lead character. There's like, they spend like 3 minutes of her singing about how great her breakfast was.
That was so weird.
Why? Yes, but it was perfectly timed with her footsteps.
I was just like trying to figure out, like, should I know this song? Is this some kind of reference or something? I mean, I had nothing.
Right. And then there's a commercial break, and then she's fighting some weird bug thing in a lake, and her dad says, "Great job for killing that thing." The end. It was just so awkward. It's like two different shows, like, duct taped together. And then, you know, they put the Clamp name on it, and it kind of looks like Clamp designed it. But it's just, why? And it's only like 13 episodes, I think, so they're really wasting time here. I don't know. No. not for me. I don't know why. But in terms of, like, sort of the mid-range, at number 6, I would put it kind of a mid-range. It was neat, and it was intriguing, but it needed to be like 45 minutes or something, or they needed to give us a little bit more of the story. Because I feel like that first episode, we're not even aware of what the actual story is.
That one would have been better being the long one as opposed to Kamisama no Memocho.
Was that long? I didn't watch that one.
Yeah, that one was a long one. It was about 44 minutes, and it dragged a little. But number 6, I think, could have been that length and not dragged.
Or at least told us a little bit more, because I'm intrigued by it, but it felt like it was just quite not enough. Like, needed a little bit more. But I didn't watch the Kamisama. What is that even about?
Well, it's about a detective who dresses like a lollygoth.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sometimes a little more to it, I suspect. Gia, do you have anything?
Basically, she's a neat detective. Neat, of course, being, what is it, not in education.
Engaged in education or training.
Right. And she's very proud of being a neat, which is weird because, I mean, she's working as a detective. You assume she's being compensated, but she still considers herself a neat. she also like almost never leaves her apartment except to like deliver the dramatic final whatever to the person they're looking for. And you know, you've got this main character, this normal guy who stumbles into her and her crowd of weird people who handle all of her errands.
Okay, well,
Pretty much. She's just surrounded by computers in her apartment with a mattress, and that's about it.
Okay, well then, I will not be watching that. But, yeah, I don't know. There were a lot of, like, sort of, kind of shows. And then there were the super dregs, to the point where, I mean, I was surprised that other people were not as blown away by how horrible R15 is. Like, that is seriously...
I have to agree with you.
I mean, one of the worst first episodes of anything I've ever seen, period. And some of the other guys were like, it's kind of shitty, but, you know, not the worst thing in the world. It's pretty close to the worst thing in the world. Like, I had a really hard time getting through it and couldn't help but notice just how incompetently made it was. Like, just the craftsmanship was poor. It was like a chair with, like, a short leg. It just, it was just horrible. And offensive, too. Like, God, I hated that thing.
I thought it was pretty bad, but I gotta say, maybe it's just because it came so long after Twin Angel Twinkle Paradise, which that is, I literally have never felt as pained watching an anime episode before. That was just so, pain. I just didn't even know where to go with it or anything. I just don't understand who that's or.
I don't know who it's for either. And there was someone in the forums who was like, oh, it's a parody. Okay, then it's the most incompetently written parody in the world. Because there's nothing in there that indicates that it's not 100% sincere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just awful. Like, and those two, really, those two, and obviously Manyu Hikencho, which has the most offensive premise I've ever heard. Which, a lot of this stuff seems like they're sort of daring each other. Like, who can come up with the most perverse premise for a show and get it on TV. Like, it's like there's a contest.
Yeah, dueling badness there, yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. I wouldn't even want to explain the premise of Manyu Hikencho to anyone who was not a hardcore anime fan and understood. Sometimes they produce stuff like this. We all wish they wouldn't, but sometimes they do. Like I said, the lows this season, those stick out much more than the highs. And that's kind of sad. I hate it when that happens.
When I was watching Manyu Hikencho, my middle sister, who speaks Chinese fluently, was looking over my shoulder and she said, those are the characters for magic and breasts in that title.
Yay.
Like, yeah, G-Marge, thanks. I needed to know that.
You shouldn't have people looking over your shoulder while you're doing this.
No.
Especially for some of these shows. Figure out what the premise is and clear the room.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, generally every season there's – I can attach something. Like, there's going to be one or two things that I'll be interested in watching more of. And surely that happened this season. Although, number six, it was intriguing and I liked it, but I'd probably wait for, like, some kind of a DVD release. That seems like one of those things where you'd want to watch a bunch in a row.
Yeah, I agree. It would definitely benefit from marathon viewing.
Yeah, something like that. But man,
yeah, I could see it.
The lows are just awful. I completely forgot about Magic Twin Angels Twinkle whatever.
I'm so sorry for putting it back in your head at all.
Mercifully, I somehow forgot. But thanks, Gia. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Like, who is that even for? I don't understand who the audience for that is, because it seems like the otaku audience, when it comes to magical girl stuff, they only want Madoka Magica type subverting of tropes. They want it to be kind of dark and serious like Nanoha or Madoka Magica. And this is 100% straightforward, super genki, just kind of ugh. I don't get it. I don't even know how that made it into production.
And has those strange little perverse moments, like when their school uniforms just totally shred off them and they look panicked. And then, yeah, the cat toys.
Yeah.
I
think we can only sit here and make disgusted noises for so long.
Sorry.
But
there was a guy on the forums, though, who had actually watched, there was an OAV based, because it's based on a pachinko game, of course, and there was an OAV based on it before. And one of the guys on the forums was like, I watched that OAV. I actually thought it was cute. But this TV series is terrible. And I was just sitting there kind of thinking, that's really bad.
they managed to execute something based on a pachinko game competently before, but now they're whiffing it. It's, yeah, that's special. It's a special level of incompetence. Does anyone know where the Manyu Hikensho thing came from? Is that based on something, or is it an original idea?
I think it's a manga.
It's a manga?
Yeah, I think it is a manga. I think the manga's out in French. That's where the tagline with a great rat comes great responsibility came from.
My God. Okay, well, the horrors of the summer season are mercifully mostly behind us. I think there's only one more show coming up.
One or two, yeah. The Gainax one, Dantalion. Actually, I'm still looking forward to that.
That's like,
yeah, I am, too.
That's like Friday, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, well, we can hopefully hopefully that one will be good, and maybe we'll get one highlight. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like and it's a shame that the only thing anybody really seems to really really have liked is not available anywhere legally. That kind of sucks. I don't know what the deal is with that, but nobody picked it up. So who knows?
Unless someone's holding back a big announcement. I mean, Utna just got reissued, so
yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, but that was Bright Stuff, Nozomi Entertainment. They don't really do a lot of... They don't do simulcasts, really.
Yeah, they don't do new either.
That's true.
They did, like, one new show in the last, like, 3 years. Everything else has been relicenses or older stuff or, you know, whatever Kleckner decides he wants to pick up. Ancient Dirty Pair, for example. All right, well, yeah, okay, I think that about wraps it up. Anybody have anything they particularly wanted to comment on? I'll take that as a no.
I would have loved Nyanpire when I was about 8.
yeah, I didn't watch any of the little 3-minute ones. Are those actually worth anyone's time?
I know a bunch of people said that they actually kind of dug Nyanpire, and I don't, and that's another one I don't really understand who it's for, because there's this heavy focus on the blood drinking, which seems a little much for little kids, but the humor is definitely not up to par for anyone over the age of like 5. So
right.
I don't know, but I would buy some of that merchandise. The design is cute, but
that's what they're hoping for. then they can say mission accomplished.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, guys. Well, that about wraps it up. Thanks a lot for coming on, and you know, back to the salt mines with you.
Well, thanks for pulling us out for a bit. Then
sure.
Either with those who love freedom, or you're with those who hate innocent life.
All inferior creatures are to be considered the enemy of the Daleks at this point.
Well, either you're with us, or you're the enemy.
We obey no one. We are the superior beings.
Okay, we're back. My guest this week is the Special Projects Coordinator for Otakon. We've had him on the show before. It's Jim Voles. Hey, Jim.
Hey.
And hey, Justin.
Hi.
Justin has mysteriously popped in from out of nowhere for this interview.
It happens.
So how's it going, Jim?
It's going okay. I'm basking in the fact that I don't have to do everything myself or be responsible for a giant chunk of Otakon. So I'm actually able to step in and help where it's needed and not feel quite so much pressure. So it's kind of nice.
Oh, so you're not quite running around with your head cut off.
No, I tricked my assistant from last year into taking over the job. So, you know, that's the way to do it, guys. If anyone else out there in the similar role is doing it,
would you like place a pie in a net or something?
Don't give away my secrets.
So, before we get into Otakon and what you've been doing and the show this year, all of us were at Anime Expo last weekend. Jim, you usually fly out for AX. And we haven't really talked about how it went, and I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit. So I guess, Justin, how was the show for you at Anime Expo this year?
Overall, it seemed pretty good, but not great. From what I was able to gather just from talking to people both in the dealer room and just regular congoers, first of all, it was mobbed, and they seemed to not really know how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was so mobbed. It was like almost San Diego Comic-Con mobbed.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dealers were loving it. They were cleaning up. And apparently the con staff, as far as the dealer room, was really accommodating this year. But crowd control, especially for panels, was just a shambles. They kept insisting on clearing out everybody between panels, and that just didn't work. It ended up causing just almost every event was delayed by up to an hour or more.
Yeah.
My favorite comment about that came from senior staffers who said, "Ah, finally a return to form." But I wasn't sure whether they were joking or whether they really meant it was somewhat comforting to find everything running a little bit late. I got to say, I have a weird perspective on it because so many of the folks that work guests on various conventions, especially the bigger ones, are common staff. So I probably know more than I should about things that I shouldn't know about, and yet I have giant holes that I had no clue about. So I have this weird sort of cheesecloth view of how things are going. But I have to say that what I didn't get this year that I did get last year was panicky emails from friends going, "Oh my God, it's all going to blow up and people are going to die." And last year,
which is funny because we actually did have a bomb scare.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but my favorite comment about that one was I think Stephanie Shea tweeted something about them competing with Otakon, and I'm like, really, guys? You don't have to take it to that extent, but...
Well, you heard what that actually was, right?
I actually heard it probably before some of you guys did, because we happened to head up to ConOps after we got back from visiting AM2. Many jokes were had at our expense about plausible deniability and being off the site and everything like that, but no, I mean, it was like a homeless guy's bag, I think, that he chained to a table while he went off and did something.
Suspicious, to be fair.
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about a series of poor life choices that probably led to that in the first place, so in context, it's not surprising.
They didn't arrest him. They basically, from what I heard, he just kind of gingerly went up and like, that's mine.
I'm really sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I, in my former life, I actually worked with counterterrorism people, and we trained cops and firemen, first responders and medics on what to do in mass casualty and evacuation incidents. So, it's not a giant surprise to me that they handled it the way that they did.
So you'd give them high marks for that?
From what I've heard, they did exactly what it was that the LAPD or county sheriff's office, I guess they're LAPD there because they're in the city proper. They're basically, they have to notify the facility safety team, and they will generally on something like that immediately notify the LAPD and bring them in. And sounds like they brought him in, had the bomb squad ready, and gently evacuated people because it's either going to get him or it's not, you know? I mean, that's the way of things. You just have to clear out the area, and if they did it in an orderly fashion, that's about all you can hope for.
I want you to give a letter grade to the LAPD.
I wasn't there. I really can't give it. How long did they take to clear out that section? You know?
I think I only have a general idea of how long it was blocked off, and I think the whole incident was maybe like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I learned about it from Twitter because I was stuck in the dealer room bathroom when that was happening.
Yeah, it was not pleasant. It was it actually occurred at a really, really bad time because most of us were still in the dealer's room and our panel was happening right then when it was virtually impossible to cross from one building to the other. You actually had to go outside in the blistering heat and walk. You know, I went through the underground parking structure to get across.
I'm really sorry to play this card, but yeah, it was, they didn't have to evacuate the entire convention center from what I understand. They just did one chunk of it.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's probably slightly easier than pulling almost 30,000 people out during the Hitalia premiere at Otakon last year. So
yeah. Well, bomb scares aside, you know, we talked like very briefly about this at the show, Jim, but your perception of the way things ran is from a very like sort of top level, like how are the guests being treated? How are the behind the scenes things happening? Like that's a different perception. And from what I saw, that was fine. That all went really, really well. And you know, at the top levels, the convention was running really great. From my perspective as a member of press, I actually had a very frustrating weekend.
Yeah,
it wasn't really being poorly run. It's just a lot of their policies just didn't make any sense and actually made it difficult for us to do our jobs.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to reintegrate people that had left and move forward on things. And, you know, there is some general shifts of direction and reprioritization. I think that after last year's scathing response from dealers and guests, that's what they concentrated on fixing. So those things seem to go pretty well. Yeah. But, you know, it's they had big growth this year. I mean, I think nobody's going to quibble about the numbers that they put out this year.
No.
You know, much
not at all.
Hate us about that. But I'm not going to quibble about those numbers at all. That
if anything, they seem a little low.
Yeah, I've never been stuck in crowding like that before at Anime Expo, like ever.
No, they're rapidly outgrowing that convention center, which is problematic because I don't know where else they'll go.
They're rapidly outgrowing the way that they're using it right now. I have good reason to believe that they will have addressed a lot of those because I think they're trying to get the whole convention center next year.
Yeah.
And if they do that, one of the things that I know you guys know Sean and Alice, former Otakon leadership and currently doing a podcast thing for the AXTV folks. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they did for Expo this year was kind of red teamed some stuff and pointed out where they saw issues, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm glad that they did that because I think it's going to be valuable feedback for them because they're sort of outsiders, but they're very knowledgeable outsiders. And I know that our senior staff that were out there more than once, we ended up in ConOps just kind of talking with their senior leadership about things that were going well and things that weren't going well. And I think they're back on the right track.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like I said, like I don't look at my experience as being typical. I look at it as I was press. I was trying to do very specific things. And because of new policies, made it harder for me to do it. And the crowding made getting across the convention center really irritating, but that's not their fault. And the incredibly bad manners of people taking photos, which I've already ranted about, of cosplayers.
God, everybody hates that except for the idiots that do it.
Well, it was really bad at AX this year, like more so than...
Dude, just walk right through them, and if they give you any grief, yell at them.
Yes, I understand. I understand that. But what I'm saying is it's really, really annoying. And to the point where, like, it wasn't even just... cosplay photos, I was stuck behind an inordinate number of people who were just walking very slowly and staring like they'd never seen a convention before and sort of just stopping randomly in front of an escalator. It was just, the crowd traffic was super irritating this year and I couldn't help but notice.
I would agree with you. And there are some flow issues with the design of that convention center. And believe me, we get the same thing because we have sort of that, where they have that big long corridor where there's actually some panel rooms and stuff.
Yeah.
We have something similar that kind of goes over Sharp Street at our convention center, and I call it the convection oven because one side of it that is sunlight facing during the heat of the summer is all glass. and we actually tape that off as a no stopping zone and have people stationed whose job it is, you know, at various points to just make sure people don't stop in the middle there.
Yeah, I mean, overall, honestly, like I cannot look at AX this year and say that it was poorly run. Or it was a failure. It was obviously a huge success, and you know, I wish them all the congratulations in the world, and I'm sure they'll have another great year next year. I just really hope they get rid of that room clearing policy because that drove me bonkers all the weekend.
We only do that at Otakon for specific things, and we've gone back and forth about that. I mean, there's always a contingent that wants a room clear every time, and then there's a contingent who's like, well, you know, legitimately, I may want to be in the same room for three panels in a row, and you've screwed me over. So you're never going to win that for everyone. And, you know, well, we have a different panel schedule to them too. They have a lot more built in space between panels. So it makes slightly more sense for them to do that. But,
well, let me ask you this, Jim, I haven't been at Otakon in a couple of years. Do the panels really fill up? Like, is there really an issue with the room being totally full?
Frequently.
Yeah, see, that's not what happens at AX. They had everything in these giant rooms. I was never in a panel room that was 100% full to capacity. There was no reason to be clearing. That's why you clear people out of the room, because if it fills to capacity, people who want to get into the next panel might not be able to get in. You know, you want to let the line in, basically. But there was no reason for that. The panel rooms were half empty all weekend.
In fairness, the hentai panel was packed.
Yeah, okay, right. So clear it out for that.
Hentai panels are always packed. Usually the Funimation big panel is packed.
Yeah, no, it was about two-thirds full at this thing.
Yeah, Well, and that's a really big room, too. It's a separately large room.
Yeah, you could park airplanes in there.
Yeah, it was gigantic. They had more than enough space for everybody is basically what I'm saying. So they didn't need to do the room clearing.
Yeah.
That was my big beef. Other than that, like I said, it was a very well-run show, and congratulations to them.
Well, there was one other thing that I was surprised we didn't hear more grief about, and that's if you didn't spring for the big expensive pass, you had to wait in line outside in the heat.
Yeah, that was – I didn't hear more griping about that primarily because I didn't have to go outside and wait in the heat, so I'm not griping about it. But they did kind of stick it to the usual pass – the normal pass holders by allowing – not only did the premium line go in before the press, which fine. Hey, whatever. But if you weren't carrying that premium pass, if you wanted to get into the big room, you had to go wait outside, and it was fucking hot that weekend. Yeah. So that was a bad choice. And they weren't even using all that space that's underneath those escalators in the main hall. They weren't using that for anything.
Yeah, sometimes the building won't let you line people up under escalators for reasons that I'm not entirely certain of, but probably have to do with fire code. I mean, I think that they'll address a lot of these issues next year, but I would definitely raise the issue of the room clears to them because I'm sure they're not the only ones who have complained about that. Or you guys aren't the only ones that have complained about that.
I know we're not. And yeah. I know I got brought up at the con feedback section, so yeah, I'm sure. But anyway, AX, neither of you went to the Miku concert, right?
No.
No, but I had some friends there, and, you know, I have to confess. Can't get off my iPad. Sorry. I have to confess, we had talked to the folks that do the Miku thing earlier this year as well, and my personal take on it was that I couldn't see paying what they'd have to pay to bring in a virtual guest when you could pay about the same amount and get a real guest. And I recognize that that's my personal bias, and it wasn't my call to make anyway, but... I think for them, especially with Toyota pitching in, it made economic sense to do it. I imagine it softened the blow to the point where it made good sense to do. And certainly they got tons of press for it. I mean, a bunch of us were having dinner on Monday night, and the Taiwanese station was covering that.
Wow.
Yeah. Like a reporter from Hong Kong is doing a report on the event in L.A., which is featuring a fake Japanese pop singer at an LA-based convention that we had just been at. So it was really strange.
Yeah.
I thought you meant that they had, like, CG news versions of American cosplayers.
Oh, you mean like the station that does the that has, like, Michelle Obama really badly caricatures in CGI? Have you seen that?
CG Steve Jobs dancing with money.
Yeah. No, they actually, like, had reporter – they had news footage coverage, and they had put together a piece on it. I couldn't understand a word of it because it was in Chinese, but, you know.
Jim, did you maybe I'm mistaken on this. You also drove down to see AM Squared, right?
Yeah. We went down there for a couple of reasons. One of which was that, you know, we'd been invited and we wanted to check out the event. And given how contentious last year was, frankly, I wasn't sure how either event was going to play out. And, also, some of our guests were actually appearing down there, so either former or future guests were there. Mr. Mariyama from Manhouse was there. The fashion designers and folks from Six were there, and Canon and Canon had been guests at Otakon in the last couple years as well. So, but yeah, I mean, I've said this on a couple of places, and I'll stand by it. It felt like a pretty decent first year con in a space that was way bigger than it needed to be. So I'm not going to go too much further on that, but that's pretty much, you know, they had some really cool stuff and it's a neat concept. I think that maybe they pick a different weekend, they might do better.
Do you buy the 8,000 number? You don't have to answer that, but I just wanted to ask it.
I know that they had turnstiles there, and I know that they were actually trying to make sure people use them in the way that was intended, which was you go through the first time and you're counted as one. The setup lent itself to weirdness because of the various spaces that they had available. I think that they – I don't want to really go into a whole lot on that one. I just don't feel comfortable with it because it's really hard to estimate that convention center in particular.
Yeah.
but the main hall was pretty empty when we were there, and that may have been because a significant number of people were upstairs in the concert, which was clearly the main draw there.
Yeah, that's pretty much what that's pretty much the feeling that we got. I don't necessarily quibble too much with the number. I think if that's unique for all 3 days of a free show, okay, yeah, you could probably pull that in, and especially in Orange County, which is chock full of teenagers.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is it's really hard to judge that. But at any given time, I don't know how many people you would be able to find warm bodies in there, you know?
Well, exactly. Like, we had an issue, like, Bamboo went and took a whole bunch of photos of basically, you know, just shy of a tumbleweed rolling through the place. And basically, we got some notes that said, hey, you know, you took these photos during a time when everyone was upstairs in the concert hall.
Right. And I was thinking the same thing as we were kind of comparing notes later. You know.
Which is fine, but that doesn't mean you have a bustling show if you literally you can drain the entire con of seeming like it has attendees by having one main event going on. AX isn't empty when the masquerade is happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's still, yeah, like I said, the big comparison was PMX, which for some reason in its first year booked the entire Long Beach Convention Center. And, you know, they didn't have a huge crowd, but they had a decent turnout for a first-year con. But, boy, they shouldn't have taken that whole con center, you know?
Just, yeah, I remember seeing footage of TMR, you know, who we'd had, like, the previous year or the year before. And we'd packed, I mean, literally standing room only, the entire ballroom area, which is about a 30,000-square-foot area. So it's about 3,000 or 4,000 people fitting there. Mm-hmm. And they had him basically in the equivalent of one of the big downstairs halls, which seats a lot more people, and they didn't have that many people in there. And I felt bad because it looked like he's playing to an empty room. And it's really easy to make it look like you're playing to an empty room, but you really want to avoid that as an event planner because that's what the guests will say, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Bamboo's point was basically this is a really good idea for a show, especially if they focus on music and culture.
Yeah,
not a great idea to have it on the same weekend. No reason to be that crazy competitive. But I hope they are successful as well. I want everyone to succeed. I want everyone to make money and have fun and put on a good show for everybody. So,
Lord knows someone in this industry needs to.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the case. Is I think that it could become a real event of its own. That's not going to be seen just in comparison to AX. But the only way they're going to do that is if they find a different weekend to do it in. Or stage it in a slightly different way. I think the idea of a free event that, you know, where you could really balance the costs pretty well is not bad. And a lot of smaller cons start off that way as like day-long festivals and then build on that. I think that might be a really good approach for them because they could get the media and you know, human interest story stuff and actually give a good value for the acts that they've got. Cause you know, Chase has contacts.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not beat around the bush. The folks that were down at that event are part of the folks at AX that know what they're doing. And, you know, I think that there's a really good chance for a good event to come out of that. I just don't think they're quite there yet.
Personally, I think it would be smart for them to move it to Memorial Day weekend because there are pretty much no conventions in this area at that time. And there really never has been.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a bad – people think that's a bad choice for a weekend because school's not quite out yet for most of the country. But it seems like a no-brainer. Just have it on Memorial Day. That way you're far away from AX and Comic-Con and Otakon. You're not really competing with any of those people for guests or space or anything.
School seems like less competition than, oh, I don't know, a giant anime convention that's been there for 20 years.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, that's all other people's conventions. Let's talk about Otakon.
Yeah.
So, right. That's why you're here. So what's big this year? Congratulations on your guest. What a roster. Really good this year.
Dude, the industry has shown us a lot of love this year. And part of that was, you know, just having built up over years, you know, the confidence of various players. You know, we've had increasing participation from folks like Aniplex and Sunrise. We actually got Viz back this year, which is something that we've been trying to do for a while. They were really pulling back on the, you know, the core fandom cons and chasing fresh tail at Comic-Con is how I put it, I think, to one of their people when I had a frank discussion. But, you know, they're not building their brand by ignoring their core, and I'm glad that they're coming back to cons.
Well, especially because, I mean, I don't know how big their presence is going to be at Otakon.
It's going to be minimal this year. I mean, I think they're doing – I know they're doing a panel – I think they might have some. I've got to look because I got to tell you, my memory of things is hampered by the fact that I didn't have to remember everything this year, and also that so many things changed at least 3 or 4 times in the last month or two, which is why a lot of the guest announcements are way later than we wanted them to be. Almost all the guests that we announced, what, today, is like 10 guests announced in the last 3 days, and almost all of them have been more or less cemented for 2 to 3 months.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I've got a question about that particular timing that came in. Well, I would imagine for Viz and a lot of companies, Otakon, the timing of it, it gets a little difficult for like a big dealer's room presence because they have their big expensive booth at Comic-Con. And getting it across the country in a few days is probably difficult.
Right. I got to tell you, if I were Viz, if I were in charge of their stuff, and I've told this to them, and I've told this to anybody else who would listen, they are a tiny, tiny fish in a pond that does not give a crap at Comic-Con. They're not hitting anybody new because everything at Comic-Con is about whatever giant sci-fi shows or media stuff or even stuff that's not even remotely related to comics or science fiction or fantasy. That's what Comic-Con is about. It's the giant West Coast media con now. And, you know, I say that as someone who's never been but have just watched how the coverage of it has changed in the last decade. That's what people are paying attention to out there. I would never have guessed that it was a con that they would think to bring Rumiko Takahashi to, you know, a couple decades ago now.
I mean, I've been going for the past 4 or 5 years, and Viz's presence there is massive. They have a huge booth that would probably not – it would seem out of place like in the AX exhibit hall. It's gigantic what they put on there.
Yeah, and the only thing I've heard from that from their presence there in mainstream media, which is what they're trying to get at. Trying to get the audience that isn't already aware of anime. But the only thing I've ever heard was a mention about their presence being large at Comic-Con in the context of some article about Death Note and some kid that had killed himself in – China thing.
Yeah, but the booth is always super packed and it always has giant lines and their panels are usually always full. I mean, it's not like they get no positive feedback at the con, but I think I absolutely agree with you. Like, we had years and years and years where Viz was basically indifferent towards us in spite of the size of our audience, in spite of our prominence, because they wanted Rolling Stone to care about what they were doing, not us. They figured they had us, so they didn't care. You know, they didn't need to try to keep us around.
Well, but I basically relayed to them at the beginning of last year when I was out in San Francisco, I said, look, we haven't seen you guys in long enough that I'm just going to put it on the line. I'm tired of answering questions from our members as to why you guys aren't coming to anime cons and talking to the people that give you most of your business.
Yeah.
And they seemed to take it seriously. And I think I hit them as they were wrestling with that internally. So, you know, maybe we may have helped push them a little bit to that, or maybe they finally internally saw the wisdom of trying to pay some attention to the people that pay the bills.
Well, yeah, certainly I've seen that change. That there's been a big shift in the way their management style has been, and I certainly appreciate it. We want to talk to them, and
yeah, exactly. You know, talk I've been a Shonen Jump subscriber since they offered the damn magazine, and you know, I'm addicted to all those goofy long running Shonen things. It gives me what I used to get out of buying 50 comic books a month, you know?
Yeah, they've been working really hard to kind of turn over a new leaf internally. We've had some private conversations with them where they've been, you know, making it very clear that they want to, you know, reach out a little more. I hope we can talk to them on the record at some point about it.
Yeah, that'll be cool, especially if we can get them on this show.
Hand guys.
So in terms of the guests you've got, who do you think is really the big pull this year?
Well, I think in terms of sheer numbers, the Hitalia people, the U.S. Hitalia people, will be the biggest draw. Mm-hmm. And that's because Hitalia is massive. It's got a huge audience, and it's a weird audience. And we talked about this last year. It's weirdly made up of people who like cute boys, people who like history and culture, and people who like silly shenanigans in 5-minute chunks. I have to admit, it has a certain charm to me. It also employs a metric buttload of voice actors on both sides. And pretty much, if you're anybody working in the industry, you've probably done at least a quick speaking role as, you know, Sealand or something in Hitalia. And long-running shows or shows with really big casts are great for that because they give you the opportunity to pull in people who've done other things or in some cases, who will go on to do bigger and better things. So from a guest perspective, a show like that is comedy gold because, you know, Funimation, they did have one cancellation. We've gone through about four or five different changes on which Japanese say you were going to be along. And one of them ended up having a schedule change at the last minute. That's the other thing, too, is in Japan, all the schedules are still screwed up because of the earthquake and rearrangements of priorities and things. So, you know, we've had a couple of really painful, almost had them, and then they got away because, you know, they have to work. So happens every year, but it seemed to be more prevalent this year.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that, so Hitalia, basically,
I think that'll be the big one. I think the movie premieres that we've got, where we've got someone from the cast being there. I mean, Johnny hasn't been to Otakon in like 5 or 6 years. So I'm really glad to see him back again. And, iShine's getting some good press. So, you know, we're kind of having his band iShine kick off our Thursday Street Festival, which we've been wanting to do for a while. You know, the musical acts will always be nice big draws, at least for the concert parts. It's a hodgepodge. We're going to have a lot of things for a lot of people, which is what we try to do.
And guests aside, you mentioned a street festival. What's new? What are you guys doing this year that's new for you?
Well, there's the street festival. That's the first thing that people will hit. And it was the newest challenge for us.
What does that entail? What can people do there?
It'll be anchored by a couple of outdoor concerts. It's going to be open to the public, partly because it's a way to give the city a little bit of a taste of what we're doing with all those crazy costumed people inside that big convention center and hotel and everything. And partly it's because we are still setting up the facility on Thursday, and pretty much the only thing we can do with it on Thursday is let people in and pick up their pre-reg. But as we've gotten better at that, I mean, last year we chewed through like 10,000 people in 2 hours in pre-reg pickup. So, yeah, I was impressed as hell by that. But, like, you know, I don't get to see any of that. But that means that we've got people who we would really prefer not wait in a giant line for no reason. And we're giving them actively something else to do during the afternoon than stand in a line where they're hot and sweaty for no reason at all. So we're hoping that they'll do that. And I think we're opening up pre-reg slightly earlier this year, but I'd have to check the hours. That's on Thursday. So there'll be iShine, I think, in the afternoon, and there's a couple of acts before them. And there'll be, you know, the usual street festival-y booths and things like that.
Are you planning on putting out a little pallet of water bottles that people can play ring toss on?
I'll have you know that we actually got a few things that we'll be giving away as prizes at Otakon from their prize bins. We're like, well, we don't need any of this stuff, but let's just get stuff that would be fun little prizes. And I think we picked up like the manga creator and some other things, some giant robot or another. Prizes. But you know, that's the thing. It's carnival games. You want cheesy, fun, silly crap to do.
Right.
And you want the cost to be low enough that people are encouraged to do it. I'm still kind of waiting to see what they're going to pull off for it. But I think we've got like some Japanese food consortium people will be able to come and present for that. I'm not quite sure what we've actually got lined up for that because it was all kind of in flux last I heard.
So that's interesting. As a tactic for sort of, well, all these people are going to line up out here anyway. We may as well give them something to do so they're not just complaining about the heat. That's pretty cool because they really don't need a lineup early for registration, right?
No, and they largely entertain themselves, and we have folks going around with water misters and, you know, keeping an eye on people for heat stroke and stuff like that. I'll never forget, it was over 100 degrees my year as conchair, and we had like 35 people that went down with heat induced exhaustion and stuff. That the main thing I remember is they ate up all of the Gatorade that we had brought with us. So I was irritated.
How dare they?
Well, yeah, it was really, it was like 99 degrees and 90% humidity. So,
oh, God.
Yeah, it was like New Orleans outside, but it was also blazingly hot. So, yeah, no relief in sight. But anyway, so that's part of the goal for that. We used to have some more aggressive line entertainment, but the people who did it you know, kind of got tired of doing it, and who can blame them? But yeah, so there'll be that. We've got Friday and Sunday concerts in their usual spots, and we're squeezing in a concert, like a mini concert or two, kind of like we did with Vic Mignogna last year, had a Saturday afternoon sort of a mini concert. And I'm calling them mini concerts because they're slightly shorter sets than a full concert piece, and we don't have the same level of volume and stage setup available. But the big conference room that we have upstairs that we use for big panels is going to be repurposed for a stage several times over the weekend. We got the fashion shows in there, and we got a couple of performances in there.
Yeah.
And then right up the road, on Saturday night, we'll have the Masquerade in the arena, as usual. And a little bit further up the road from that, the folks up at the Baltimore Symphony are doing a Distant Worlds concert. I think it's the Baltimore Symphony. I know it's one of the local musical things. But yeah, Uematsu's was coming there for that. And it was one of those happy coincidences where I think they thought that we were like other citywide festivals and kind of rolled up the doors at 7. And they were horrified to find that they had scheduled opposite us. And we said, well, you know, we can all work this out. And so we'll happily send off, you know, as many people as want to go to that concert can happily go to that concert, and it will just be less crowded at Otakon. They'll get to do something awesome, and it will be less crowded for us. So, and in the process, we get Uematsu to come and do a charity event for us. And, you know, that doesn't suck.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I know. I've like missed that concert like 4 or 5 times in the past couple of years as it's gone through, you know, reasonably obtainable areas. And so, of course, it's going to be smack dab in the middle of our con.
Right. Right. You're going to have so much downtime.
Yeah.
So are you going to have people guarding the fire alarms this year?
They have added additional security to them. And I know that the question will be asked. My understanding is that there may or may not be footage of what may or may not cause the fire alarm to go off. We're pretty sure it wasn't a fire in the kitchen. We're pretty sure it was someone who actually pulled the alarm. And I think that it's being investigated on an official level somewhere. But that's still right now my understanding of it as of last year. And I'm not on the board this year, so I don't necessarily have privy to that. But I have encouraged them to make whatever public that they can soon. Having said that, yeah, we're going to be watching stuff like that like a hawk. And if anybody thinks it's particularly funny, they're going to have a face full of people like me to deal with. So
I'm sure. Yeah, that was a huge, although last year, all anybody really said about it was like, wow, surprisingly not that hard to get 30,000 people out and then back in, like pretty efficient, you know?
You know why? The year before that, the fire marshal said, you guys are really crowding up the space. Do you have sufficient event managers? And we went, what do you mean? And they said, well, there's an ordinance that says you're required to have X number of people for every 1,000 people trained in crowd control. So I think about 80 of us or so had to take a course, and I'm one of them. And, you know, we had to take an online course and get a little certification that says we know what to do if there's a mass evacuation. And lo and behold, there was a mass evacuation, and it went more smoothly than they'd ever had done before. So, wow. You know, I could not be happier with how our staff did last year. There was definitely some exhaustion and adrenaline induced madness in the wake of that. But we got like 30,000 people out of that building in 15 minutes. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
We actually had a staffer carry someone down the fourth floor from the fourth floor who was in a wheelchair, and they had shut down the elevators. So, you know, they've addressed some safety issues that came out as a result of this, but we had some personal heroism among our staff, and that was recognized to the extent we can. And it was a scary but kind of awesome thing to watch people just kind of go with it and trust us to make it right. And then we were able to do our part to make it right when they got back in, and we didn't really lose all that much programming. Although that's probably one of the most insane half hours that I can remember, where the head of programming and I sat down and redid everything to lose as little as possible.
Well, speaking of programming, you know, I looked over your programming guide for this year and your guests and everything. And you guys, I mean, you last time you were on, we talked about this a little bit, that Otakon really is committed to remaining an anime convention. Yeah. And that seems even more so this year, almost as though you sort of doubled down on that. So moving forward, like, this is what Otakon is. You are an anime convention, period, dot.
Well, sort of. I mean, our mission statement's right on the homepage. We basically aim to educate you sort of surreptitiously by getting you hooked on pop culture. Mm. And the example I always give is that how many people do you know that know snippets of Japanese or little bits of customs or weird references because they happen to watch an anime where they become important? Even silly stuff like Shin-chan or what people eat for breakfast and stuff like that, you absorb all that stuff without even realizing it, and it gets people – I mean, we have clear evidence that it gets people interested in the language and the culture and the history. And what's happened over the years is that's always been our focus, and we want to leave room for fun. So yeah, we'll have a zombie panel or whatever because that's what's popular that year, and you know, people will cosplay whatever they want to, but – for probably a good 5 to 7 years, we've been really serious about making sure that we stay true to that. And part of that's because we kind of have to, because the IRS looks to make sure we're spending money on what we say we're about and not just throwing a big party. Right, right. And the other part of that is that most of the staff honestly loves that stuff like fans do. And there's enough really smart people in the community that come up with great fan panels. And you know, we've generally had at least one guest that was sort of an academic guest. This year we have Roland Keltz, who's kind of awesome and very prolific writer and speaker on that stuff. He's doing like 4 panels for us, I think. So we want to make sure we've got that angle covered. But, you know, we have Taka on staff. Everybody who's in this world knows Taka. Taka's in his real life does stuff like trains people on how to use the stuff at nuclear power plants. And he was across the street from Fukushima, literally across the street. In fact, his laptop is still there when they had to evacuate him. So I think he and our press guy who is involved in nuclear power stuff are doing a panel at Otakon this year on, you know, really what goes on in that disaster and what's it really all about. So, you know, we can do stuff like that because between the staff and the people that are at Otakon, you get people who really honestly do have that broad a range of interest and that kind of diversity and richness of knowledge. And why not share it?
So what you're saying is next year we can look forward to a programming that is 100% steampunk related.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well. Okay. Well. That's cool. Anything?
I'm sorry. You got me all ranty about the thing I really like about Otakon, and that's that we really do try to do what we say we're going to do. We try to put our money where our mouth is, and I'm proud of the fact that we usually succeed at it. So.
Yeah, I think so. So, anything in particular you want to, you know, people who are going to the show? Anything particular this year they should know before going? Any tips you might have for people heading out?
There's a great newbie guide on the website, and that's usually in our program book too, which will give you some tips about, you know, the usual advice we always give people: don't wear your PVC costume to stand outside for 18 hours. You know, that's kind of dumb. Make sure you drink lots of water, not just coffee and energy drink. Please remember to eat. I personally have witnessed at least 4 people just literally faint because they had not eaten in 2 days. I can't imagine forgetting to eat, but then Justin, you and I have gone out for dinner before. So
yeah, it just doesn't happen to people like us.
No. So there's some good advice out there. The forums are full of people giving generally good advice to each other. I'm always dubious about the threads where they say how many people they think they can pack into rooms at different hotels, but since we packed up all the hotels in the city, you know, a month ago anyway, I'm not too worried about that at this point. Right. And you really want to pay attention to you guys are coming this year, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'm not coming. Justin's not going. But we have Ian and we'll be there, yes.
Right, yeah. You might want to pay attention to Mariama's panel this year.
Okay. Well, we'll do that.
Oh, is he going to discuss what I hope he's going to discuss?
I think he might. He's been kind of coy about it, and and then he told me a lot of stuff and said I could spill it, but I'm kind of waiting to spill anything until he does.
Darn. Well, yeah. Actually, and people who want to meet are my boss and editor, publisher now of Anime News Network, Christopher McDonald will be there. Gia's going to be there. So you can meet all those folks at the A&M panel, which I think is on Saturday. So
yeah. Are you guys on Saturday or on Friday? I don't know. I don't know. If you ever want a study in insane chaos theory, the building of the Otakon schedule, I mean, you think about it, we've got 6 panel rooms, 2 workshops, you know, main events, arena, all this other stuff, and we have to make it all work and try to leave sanity space between things wherever possible. And it's just crazy. And stuff will change literally while you're editing something. Everything around it will have changed sometimes. So we wind up in these massive Skype fests trying to get our acts together. And it somehow comes very close to all working out every year.
So before we get to Twitter here, I just want to ask, I have a pet theory, and it was confirmed at Anime Expo this year yet again, that West Coast anime convention goers are just massively more mellow and relaxed and not as, well, frankly, irritating as East Coast convention goers. I did not hear a single Marco nor Polo at the entire show at AX. Not a single yelled meme, not anything like that. No one blasting music in the hallways and yelling at the top of their lungs. I didn't, and I'm sure some of that happened, but I wandered around that convention for 4 days straight and didn't see any of it. And yet, I hear nothing but complaints about the crowds on the East Coast, even from my East Coast buddies. The crowd there is just excessively juvenile and obnoxious, and I am kind of trying to start like a rapper feud here. But I'm just curious, Jim, you were at AX. What did you think of the crowd, and how does it compare to Otakon?
You know, this was a topic of discussion amongst a bunch of senior con staff. I'll just kind of leave it at that and let you imagine who was in on the discussion. But okay. The discussion started just after I had come up the stairs, and people were shouting angrily that they had lost the game. And me being me, of course, I said, yeah, you lost the game because it's a tired old meme and it needs to die. But, you know, I'm a cranky old man, yeah. So they don't care what I think. But I think that the fans who attend the East Coast cons tend to be more older fans attending it. It's less perceived as a young person's event. There is a huge young person contingent there, and I think that there's more friction because of that, you know? Because I think that a lot of the old school people that would go to AX maybe go to Fanime or one of the other more regional cons where they feel like it hasn't lost the old school appeal.
That would be Anime Los Angeles, yes.
Yeah, Anime Los Angeles is a perfect example. Chaz runs a show that's you know, he works with the WesterCon people too, so it's old school fans, and they celebrate things that are new, but they also feel more like an old school East Coast con, I imagine, just because of the people that I know that attend it. And I think that you're right. There are huge numbers of kids that are in both cultures, but there is a difference between the West Coast laid-back mentality and the East Coast hurry-up-and-do-stuff mentality.
So you think it's just a basic regional difference that sort of manifests itself in the way the crowd behaves?
My only West Coast cons that I go to are Anime Expo and Gallifrey, typically, so they're the only ones I have experience with. And WHO fans are a weird bunch, so I think maybe maybe you're onto something.
I don't know. I need in order for my research to continue, I need to start going to more East Coast conventions.
I think that's the way it is, and you know, you can throw up your gang signs, and I'll throw up mine, and you know,
I'm gonna get shot. I know it.
East side, no, you're gonna get shot.
I can't choose sides.
Yeah, I'll take you to the areas of Baltimore where that's likely, if you like.
That's not hard. Walk a block north.
Yeah, it's more than a block north.
Just kidding.
You get up to places that are featured on The Wire, then you're off the paved road, so to speak.
Right.
But that's true. That's true in LA as well.
Oh, hey, no kidding. One of my one of my favorite activities to do is take photos of cosplayers standing next to homeless people downtown. I enjoy that. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for answering that question. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and do Twitter. We got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
Via Twitter. The first is from everyone's favorite V guy. who hasn't submitted questions for a little bit, but he assures me that he's going to be back in action pretty soon here. But he asks, why was Baltimore, of all places, one of the first big anime con hubs on the Eastern Seaboard, as opposed to somewhere else? It makes sense on the West Coast that it's either in San Francisco or Los Angeles, but I guess he wants to know why Baltimore.
That's a really cool question.
I've always kind of wondered that.
I think I can tell you why. Well, first of all, Otakon started in Pennsylvania, and we're a Pennsylvania-based organization for all kinds of legal reasons. That's where we founded. We ended up moving to Baltimore, and in fact, that was my first year attending Otakon in 96. And with one exception, we've been in the Baltimore metro area ever since. Part of that is because the Baltimore metro area has long had a really rich sci-fi scene. There's a lot of, you know, 30 and 40 and 50 year cons in the area that, so there's that sci-fi con world that already existed in the area. So there's a lot of fan folk to feed your convention and also to organize it. I mean, a lot of our founding members, or the first generation after them, came out of that scene. And so they had a lot of experience and had seen what worked and didn't work in cons. And luckily there were people who were forward thinking rather than backward thinking. So that's kind of why Otakon kind of took off and succeeded. And we also were right place, right time, you know, like most of the other big cons that we had a couple of years under our belt when anime really took off. Is that a reasonable answer?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's absolutely true. It's totally right place, right time. I mean, name the number of comic book publishers that operate out of San Diego.
Well, but that's the thing, too, is that New York is way expensive.
Yeah.
And it has always favored expos because it's so easy to get around in New York City. So you can go for the day and come back, whereas the sci-fi con world is all go for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And so it became an event that resembled that more than the expo style that you get at New York Comic-Con now.
Okay, we got two similar questions on this. But Pat's Prime asks, you've announced a number of big guests in the past months, Shinkai, Murata Ishiguro, Times from Italia. Why do all the major announcements come right before the convention? Do you feel that announcing guests so late cuts into the number of people who would come to the convention for those guests because of such short notice?
No. No, it has nothing to do with that. All of the – we always announce guests – based on one of two criteria. The first criteria is occasionally they will say, we can't announce this guest until X date. So there are sometimes guests where that's the case. More often than not, though, so Shinkai is a good example. He's one of the guests that we've put up in the last week or two. He's the guest I'm probably personally looking most forward to because I just recently saw 5 cm/s and loved it. We've known that he was coming to the event since TAF, but getting all the coordination done and tying off with the right people and getting the information we needed to announce and that kind of thing has taken literally like 5 months to do. And that's happened a lot this year, even more so than usual, because I think people on this side, you know, because it's not constantly in the news cycle anymore, they forget Japan is still kind of reeling from the earthquake. It's had a huge effect. You know, the manga publishers are waiting on ink, and that has a ripple effect. And so installments are delayed, and people are busy at different times. It's just added up repeatedly and repeatedly.
Right.
So that's why we announce late, is because we don't have the information we need to make the announcement, or because they've asked us to wait to a specific date. This year, it's mostly been the former.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a much smaller scale, but I can relate to that because I won't announce who the guest is on this show until we have a confirmed, locked-in time that they are going to appear, because things could always change. And you don't want to announce something and say, oh, sorry, can't have it.
My criteria for announcing a guest is we have to have your headshot, your bio, and either your reply to the email or a signed contract, depending on the sort of guest it is, that says that you're going to be there. And as a result, we rarely have guests that back out. The ones that do back out before you know about it.
Right. Well, that answers sort of the last two questions there. And, you know, good luck with the show this year. I'm sure it'll be a huge success. And thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
You got to come out there sometime, Zach. I'm telling you.
moving away from Comic-Con.
You know what? Comic-Con can move away from us.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know, but a boy can dream.
Actually, it is honestly looking more and more like in the next, at least next year, I'm going to be at a lot more East Coast conventions, so maybe. Not that I don't want to. I love Dotacon. Dotacon's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm dying to go back. It's been a few years for me now.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were out there, Justin? I'm trying to remember. Ooh. Was it six or seven, maybe? Or
I think it was seven.
Okay.
I think it was 07, yeah. And I always have a really good time, and there are a bunch of, you know, us old-timey, you know, nerds out there that I always only see at Otakon. I think it's been a couple of years now since I've seen Mike Toole.
he's got some panels for us, I think.
Yeah, I always look forward to his panels, and, you know, occasionally we get to tape them. We don't have it together this year.
I always see them on the schedule and go, oh, that's going to be awesome, and then I never have time to go.
Right, of course.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jim, Gia, and Rebecca for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a little review or a rating or something. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and see you all next week.